It occurs every year. We film reviewers feel the need to list those films we like the best, often referring to them, well, some of us anyway, as the year's best. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. And on this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I will share our lists for the films we appreciated the most in 2018. And maybe some of you will even agree with our respective choices. Anyway, don't touch that dial because a special final look back edition of Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
Free your radio and hear Spokane Public Radio wherever you go when you listen live on your mobile phone, tablet, or computer at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Just click on Listen Live, pick your station, and start listening. Tune in anytime for NPR programs, local news, music, public affairs, arts news, and more at KPBX, KSFC, or KPBZ. You can listen to all three live from our website by clicking the blue Listen Live link at the top. Whichever station you choose, SPR travels with you, keeps you company, and keeps you in touch with the world. Visit SpokanePublicRadio.org and listen live.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbinder, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that appreciates nothing more than a good movie done well. Unless, of course, it's a good movie done well and being screened at budget prices with an enthusiastic audience. One, of course, that knows when to laugh, when to cry, and when to chew popcorn with its mouth closed, and so on and so on. You know the mantra. Anyway, welcome to our annual rite of listing the films that we liked the best from over the past year. As it turns out, 2018 boasted an eclectic collection of quality in a wide range of genres, and while there are a few favorites that keep showing up on every critic's list, there are others that some of us haven't even heard of, much less seen. So without wasting any more time, let's get to it. And I want to make two caveats at the very beginning. One is, we always talk about, oh, these are the best films, or like critics love to do that. And yet when I say read a New York Times reviewer and 8 of the 10 films I've never heard of, It always makes me think, well, that is just really arrogant. And the other caveat ties into that. These are our personal choices. We all have different opinions. I mean, there's a film that Nathan is going to talk about that is one of the ones he loved the entire year. And I did not like the movie at all.
I know what you're talking
about. It's just a different
about.
Way yeah. that we're talking about it. I mean, we can talk about the quality of this movie back and forth, but these are personal choices. And so with that, Nathan, why don't you kick off?
I just have to say, talking about the year as a whole, 2018 was fraught, to say the least, for a number of reasons. But in terms of the films, before I sat down and made my list, I really didn't think that 2018 was all that good of a movie year. That's a conversation we always have, even though it's kind of an arbitrary one, because movies just come out when they come out. It's not like 2018 produced these movies personally. But until I sat down and made this list, I thought that it was like, you know, there was some good stuff, but nothing really jumped out at me. And then I made a list of all the movies that I could potentially put on my top 10, and I had way too many for a top 10. There were probably 25 or 30 movies that I would say I either loved or really, really liked that I considered for my top 10. And looking at our three individual lists, which we'll run through at the end of the show, I think this might be the most variety we've ever had.
I mean,
there are
correct.
So many movies on both of your lists that I really, really liked and yet didn't make it into my top 10. And I think vice versa. So
I think, in terms of that,
was a good year.
Yeah, it was. But in terms of that, let's say compare that to other years. I mean, in other years, there were like 10 or 11 movies that were just absolutely great.
Yeah.
And I think there were a few movies that were great.
Yeah.
But I don't think overall it was a good year. It wasn't the best year we've had
well,
on this show.
I think most years there's two or three movies that we can all kind of agree are these are the ones that are the top of the heap. And I don't think that's the case this year. And I think that's actually a good thing because we'll be talking about a lot more movies than we normally would. So I think we'll just start. I'll talk about a movie that shows up on most of our lists. It's on my top 10. It's on Dan's top 10. And that's Leave No Trace, the Deborah Granik film, which we talked about a few months ago. I saw it in Seattle at the International Film Festival and really fell in love with it. And it just kind of it's haunted me since then, since May or June when I first saw it. And that's a movie that I think probably played here for a week or two and then slowly slipped away.
Yeah.
I think people are kind of forgetting about it other than critics making their year-end top 10 lists. It shows like this that can remind people, go out and see movies like Leave No Trace. It's on DVD now. You can pick it up. But
yeah, and for whatever reason,
I was
not a huge fan of that movie.
Okay.
It has this sort of environmental theme. It has this family theme. It has these people who are living off the grid. And I don't know, it made me like uncomfortable throughout, but not necessarily in a good discomfort, uncomfortable way. I don't know.
And maybe that. Maybe
so it doesn't show up on
my top
20.
It's certainly on my top 10 list. And I think partly the reason why is coming into it, I was thinking, oh, this is just going to be another one of those Ben Foster weirdo roles.
Yeah.
And it was. And yet it worked within the frame of what Granik was trying to do. It's based upon a novel, My Abandonment by Peter Rock. I really like the movie a lot, if only because of Foster's rather modulated performance. But Thomasin McKenzie, young girl from, I think she's from New Zealand, and she does a perfect American accent. I liked it a lot.
Well, maybe we should talk about documentaries now. We have a resident documentary superfan in the room, Mary Pat.
Otherwise known as a freak. Yes.
And,
yeah.
And I notice, MP, that you have three documentaries on your top 10. Why don't you run them down?
Yeah, and then I actually have two on my secondary list.
There we
go. I could have thrown in a few more. And when I was looking at documentaries this year, initially I was saying to myself, not that many resonated for me. But you're right. I did come up with three. And RBG, of course, had to be on my list. I'm not saying it was the best documentary ever, but I think it was really inspiring. And I appreciated learning more about her, even though I knew a lot about her. But it was an interesting
RBG
combo.
Being
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Justice Ruth Bader
Ginsburg. Oh, right. Yes. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I like this because it focused on her private life and her relationship with her husband, too. The other one I have on my list is McQueen, which actually I saw on a plane. So I don't know. It's a little not quite legit, but it's
that
about
counts.
The designer, Alexander McQueen, who
the late designer, right?
Yes, who comes from a very unpredictable background for someone who ends up heading Givenchy and Gucci and so forth. And there was an exhibit of his costumes or fashion designs at the Met a couple years ago called A Savage Beauty. And I really liked this. I think you may have the opportunity to see it somewhere. But my favorite of the year was actually a documentary, Three Identical Strangers, about triplets who were separated at birth. And the reason I like this doc is because it went in a direction about a third of the way through that I certainly did not see coming. And I think that's well worth seeking out.
That's right. I agree with all those, particularly Three Identical Strangers. I want to add to that a documentary. You didn't mention Free Solo, did you? The
no.
Alex Honnold
yeah.
movie, which even though we know what happens, that movie is the most tense experience I had throughout the year. It was a movie that
if you're a fingernail biter, you'll have none left
right,
after
no
this.
Kidding.
And if you're acrophobic, don't even bother.
Right. Right. And you put Shirkers on your list.
Yeah.
I put mine on my secondary list.
Yeah, I have Shirkers. It's the only documentary that made my top 10, but that's a Netflix film that we reviewed a few weeks ago. And that's a movie that really, really struck me. It's about a bunch of teenagers making a film in 1990 Singapore and what happened to that movie after it was over.
It's a mystery and a kid's film and a growing up film, a coming of age movie.
And it's also just a really great behind the scenes, here's how we made this movie under bizarre circumstances thing. And it's also kind of a self-reflexive exercise for the director, Sandy Tan, sort of looking back at her own adolescence and her own feelings about this project that was abandoned for so long. So that's a movie that I think people should seek out, and that's on Netflix right now.
Well, typically we find some sort of fun movie to put on our list, and I'm checking out both of your top 10 lists, And maybe Isle of Dogs would qualify.
That's on Dan's list.
That was on my secondary list.
Definitely on my list.
And another film on my secondary list was Game Night, which came out very early in the year. But I don't know, for whatever reason, I thought the cast, Jason Bateman, Rachel McAdams in particular, it was just a fun movie. And there were some really, really classic lines in that movie.
That's right. And if we're going to talk about fun movies, for me, the fun movie of the year was Crazy Rich Asians. It was a movie that I went into thinking, oh, this is going to be another one of those Ken Jeong kind of hangover kind of movies. And it was a traditional rom-com. It was a romantic comedy. It was silly and weird and bizarre, but it worked for me. I loved Awkwafina. I loved Henry Golding. I loved Constance Wu. I just thought it was a movie that hit you in the heart.
Okay, there's another fun movie, though. On both of your top 10 lists, it didn't make mine, and that's one of the biggest movies of the year, and that's Black Panther.
Oh, absolutely.
And now it's rare for a Marvel movie or a comic book movie to make a critical top 10, but I'm seeing Black Panther on quite a lot. Can you pinpoint what it is about Black Panther that makes it both an audience favorite and something that critics appreciate?
But I didn't think it was a comedy. I mean, to me, that's an action film.
I said it was fun, you know.
Oh, fun. Oh, okay.
For me, the reason why is because it takes the standard superhero, the standard Marvel template, and it twists it. And it makes, for one thing, the bad guy, played by Michael B. Jordan, be actually a guy who could be a good guy, but who just because of his background and everything, he's tainted in this direction. Chadwick Boseman is terrific. That we've seen him as Jackie Robinson and as Thurgood Marshall
and
as James Brown. But he's terrific as the lead.
Yeah, I agree.
And it just twists reality around in a way.
And
that
I like the
thought,
female characters, characterizations, and I thought it was beautiful.
It was. And Ryan Coogler, of course, is the director. And even though it's probably my third favorite of his movies, he's made three really good movies in his short career. For my money, the best big blockbuster of the year is on my honorable mentions list. It didn't quite crack the top 10, but that's Mission Impossible Fallout. Now, you want to talk about a movie that delivers on its promises? Mission Impossible Fallout does that. I mean, that movie is just 2 hours of pure adrenaline from beginning to end. And it's so willfully insane and so crazy.
Over the top,
which is in keeping that with its star,
that helicopter chase is one of the most amazing
one of the best
things
scenes
ever.
Of the year. And obviously, when we put these lists together, we tend to go towards the heavier stuff. But Mission Impossible Fallout, if ever a big action movie deserved to be on a top 10 list, it's that one. Although it didn't make mine, but it's really good.
And that was the first half of this special Movies 101 broadcast about our favorite films of 2018. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to continue our discussion. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of this show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I began listing the films that we thought were the best of what we saw in 2018. We don't always agree on this show, folks.
What?
And so consequently,
and less this year than other years.
All three of us are going to mention films that none of us would even remotely think of putting on our other lists. So I'm going to begin by saying, I went into Bradley Cooper's A Star is Born thinking I'm going to hate this movie because I didn't like any version of it I'd ever seen. And it won me over. I thought Cooper was terrific. I thought the music was great. And I thought Lady Gaga put in a star performance that is amazing for a first-time performance. So it's on some people's lists. It's not on my two partners' lists.
No.
And would not be. But then again, they're going to mention films that I would never put on my list either.
Well, so, to give Mary Pat credit here, she has A Star Is Born on her honorable mentions list. It didn't come near my top 20. I was not as enamored of A Star Is Born as so many other people seem to be. And I'm still not quite sure why. It just didn't hook me the way that it hooked you and millions of other people. I mean, it was a really big hit, and the soundtrack has been massive. I mean, I've heard that one song so many times.
Shallows.
Yeah, over mall loudspeakers and stuff.
Right.
And I'm kind of surprised it's not showing up on more top 10s, because critics were raving about it out of the, I think it was at the Venice Film Festival.
Yeah.
And
we'll just have to wait till the Academy
Toronto.
Awards time, because it's going to snare a few.
I think it's got a really good chance of taking some of the biggest awards home. Yeah, that's a good choice, I suppose.
All right, now go with your...
Okay.
My outlier, the biggest outlier on my list, is my number two film of the year, which is Paul Schrader's First Reformed. This is a movie that is, I think, divisive. it proved divisive in this room. But it's one of those movies that you're either going to go with it or you're going to reject it outright. It's a film about a priest played by Ethan Hawke, who I think is absolutely stunning in the movie. He's clearly got some kind of terminal illness, and he's writing this diary. And about halfway through the movie, one of his congregants dies unexpectedly. And the ripple effect of that death changes the way that the Ethan Hawke character approaches his own faith, approaches the world around him, and realizes that there is sort of an industrial complex to modern religion. And it's all tied up together. And there is sort of this metaphysical bent. You called it magical realism, Dan, when we initially reviewed it, and I could see that. But
magical unrealism.
Well, I think it is a nearly perfect film and a masterpiece and one of the best movies that I've seen in the last few years. And I just don't know why it's not on either of your lists, because it's so
good.
Well,
that death that you talk about, I mean, it's shortly after that that the movie starts to go, in my considered opinion, off the rails. To me, the problem was there was no ending. It goes off into this metaphysical world that's beyond Pluto, beyond the Kuiper Belt, and I could not rein myself back in. It was like, oh my God, Schrader's totally lost it.
Well, I've seen it twice. I can't wait to see it a third time.
Oh dear.
Yes.
Imagine.
I thought this was a tough watch. Mm. I loved Ethan Hawke. I thought his performance was incredible.
He was amazing.
But wow, the story is so tough.
And the movie is so well made in so many respects. It would, to me, the problem was with the script. But that's,
Well,
Murray Pat, what's your outlier?
So I have an outlier that actually is a Netflix film, so maybe that's why it's not getting attention, because there's still that whole controversy. Can we include those Netflix movies or not?
But it was also played in theaters.
Yeah,
They released it in theaters.
So mine was The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, the Coen Brothers movie. And it's a series of vignettes about things that happen in the West, and not all of the vignettes work perfectly, but I really, really got a kick out of some of them.
We should point out that your sister and brother in law, like 7 minutes into the second sequence, went, no, and we had to stop and come back and watch it later.
Right. So this is not a movie for everyone, but if you hang in there, I think it's classic Coen Brothers, and I like the Western theme, and I like many of the performances.
I really liked The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, too. I mean, I think it's just speaking to the general quality of the year that it didn't end up on my list.
Same with me.
But the thing about anthology movies is, by design, they're going to be flawed. But Buster Scruggs, I think, is a good distillation of why we still care about the Coen brothers.
No, I agree.
It shows all of their tricks in one film. So that's a very good choice.
Exactly. Now, let's just cut to the chase here. This is the movie that showed up in all three of our lists, and it's number one on your list.
Yep.
Mary Pat has no problem with it being number one, certainly on her list. And I really don't either, even though I didn't number mine. And that is
Roma. It's the only
Alfonso Cuarón.
It's the only movie that showed up on all three of our lists. So we're
Which is bizarre when you think about it.
This is a movie that I think we're going to be talking about a lot in the future. It was one of those movies that, after it was over, I thought, that's an important film. That's a game changer of a movie. And we don't see those very often. I mean, the heft of the thing alone. And yet, at the same time, it is this very delicate, intimate story of this woman who's a maid working for a doctor's family in 1970s Mexico, and about the class divide between her and the family, how she's part of the family, but she'll never really be part of the family because of how she was raised and where she came from.
And yet that doesn't become the focus of the film.
No.
That is not, in many of these movies, that would have been the class distinctions.
Yes.
And the irony of the... That isn't the movie.
It's part of the fabric of,
it's
of
like
the film.
It's like a subtextual
and,
the movie.
And Alfonso Cuarón, the director, I mean, he's known for films like Children of Men and Gravity. And so there are these kind of big set pieces within Roma that wouldn't be out of place in one of those earlier films. And yet it never feels, at least I didn't think, it never felt like he was showing off just to show off. Every decision that he makes in this movie feels of a piece. And it's this beautiful black and white vision, and I love it so much.
And the performance by the lead actress
Yalitza Aparicio.
Amazing.
Absolutely amazing.
I don't know where they found that face, but there's a shot in the movie where she's sitting at the back of a movie theater, and something has just happened, a minor thing has just happened that will become a major thing later on. And Alfonso Cuarón just holds on her face, and it says so much just in her eyes. It's really,
yeah,
really
great. The only dilemma about this film is it has not to date shown in a lot of theaters. And mm-hmm. so the go-to place to see this is on Netflix. And so I think that ideally you should see it in a theater.
That's right. And,
I
want to reiterate this. We reviewed this film and all three of us loved it. This is a film that some people will watch 10 minutes into it and go, it's in black and white. It's about these Mexican people I don't even care about. I don't know about.
Multiply subtitled.
It's like, what is this movie? And this is a critic's movie and I just don't get it. Roma is a film that you have to sit and watch and let it carry you away. Don't go into it with expectations. It is a wonderful film. It's a movie that borrows from some of the great filmmakers that have ever worked in the medium, but it's not derivative in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
It's totally original, and yet at the same time, you can see the history of film in almost every frame. Alfonso Cuarón is the great filmmaker working today.
Yeah, certainly one of them. We now have to reveal the entire contents of our list, don't you think?
Like, yes.
I think we should go through. Who wants to go first?
Let's let Mary Pat go
first. Okay, and this is loosely in reverse order, but I had on my list RBG. I had the McQueen documentary about Alexander McQueen. Summer 1993, which is a sweet little Spanish language film. I had A Fantastic Woman about a trans woman who loses her partner. And I had number 6, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and Black Panther, as we pointed out before, 4 Identical Strangers. Black Klansman, we didn't talk about it, but I was still
Spike
really
Lee's
impressed
movie.
With mm-hmm. that particular film. 8th Grade, which I think all of us had at least on our list somewhere. And then finally, Roma.
That's right. Let me go with mine.
Okay.
8th Grade, to me, was second only to Roma in terms of the film. Bo Burnham's first movie, and it is an amazing film with Elsie Fisher and Josh Hamilton. It was a terrific film. I also had A Star Is Born. I had Isle of Dogs rather than I Love Dogs. Black Panther's on my list. Another movie that we haven't talked about, Yorgos Lanthimos's The Favorite. How could we not? 3 of the great performance, female performances of the year. Great performances, period, by any actor.
And that was on Nathan's list,
Emma,
too.
Emma Stone, Rachel Weisz, and Olivia Colman. Leave No Trace, Roma, Crazy Rich Asians, 3 Identical Strangers, and another movie that we haven't mentioned, A Quiet Place. That's on my list. John Krasinski's film starring him and Emily Blunt as the people living in a world with monsters who can hear them. So,
And my list, I actually numbered mine, so I'll start at 10. Another movie we haven't mentioned, Annihilation by Alex Garland, the sci-fi film.
I don't know about that.
come on. It was really, I've seen it twice now. I'm really into Annihilation. Number 9 is a South Korean film called Burning by Lee Chang-dong, who made Poetry and Secret Sunshine. It's really an interesting film. Number 8, Leave No Trace, which we talked about earlier. Number 7, the documentary Shirkers. Number 6, a movie that has not opened here yet, but that's Barry Jenkins' If Beale Street Could Talk, his follow-up to Moonlight. Number 5 is Steve McQueen's Widows, another movie we haven't mentioned mm-hmm. that I think is getting real short shrift. Number 4, the film Shoplifters from Japan, which won the Palme d'Or last year. It's really something else. Number 3, Yorgos Lanthimos is The Favorite. Number 2, my beloved First Reformed.
Yes.
And the best film of the year, without question, is Roma.
Yeah, and with that, let's end our annual look at what we consider the best films the year had to offer. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and I'm proud to head into 2019, still working with my film-going partners, Nathan Weinbinder and Mary Pat Truthart. And that goes for Jim Tevenin, too, who both produces and engineers our show. We thank you to our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll continue our quest to seek out the best that contemporary cinema has to offer. Until then, remember these words from the great director, Frank Capra. There are no rules in filmmaking, only sins, and the cardinal sin is dullness. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.